Hey everyone, welcome back to All Things Education with Matthew, Madeline.
Right off the script.
Matthew and Madeline.
Lance is still Lance.
This is All Things Education, a podcast where three-decade teachers discuss what they know.
The good, the not so good, and the continuous opportunity for high-quality education in Texas.
Join us for a smart conversation as we dig deep into the issues that affect us all in and around our great state. And here are those three majestic instructors now. Hey everyone, welcome back to All Things Education with Matthew, Natalie, and Lance. I am Lance Barish, and I teach high school mathematics in the great metroplex of Dallas-Fort Worth, here with...
This is Matthew. I am an educator in Austin. I teach speech and debate and creative writing.
And this is Natalie Adias. I am a campus leader based in San Antonio, Texas. Just out of the classroom for a couple years now.
Wonderful to see both of you as always in this holiday season. And speaking of holidays, we're in the home stretch. We're in that weird, what I like to call interregnum period between Thanksgiving and winter break for us. You know, it's just three, sometimes four short weeks where the kids are, how do I put this, more locked in than at any other point in the year, right?
100%.
Not so sure about that there, Lance.
Have y'all seen that meme on social media lately that's like the 3 weeks in between Thanksgiving and Christmas is like the final lap of Mario Kart when everything gets really fast and crazy? I was like, it's so right. It's so
Hopefully
right.
No one has a blue shell to send our way.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And also here at the high school level, aside from all that, there's that small matter of final exams. To keep your video game metaphor going, Natalie, it's what I like to call the final boss standing between my ninth graders and their blissful 2 week vacation. If they can just slay that boss, then they can go play their video games for the next couple
nice
of weeks.
Analogy.
Yeah.
That's good.
But in schools, like that's what we're here to talk about, not our, you know, hunkering down with our Mario Kart. So what's the vibe like in schools right now? Natalie, let's start with you. What's going on in your school here in December?
You know, just what you described, every student is on the top of their game and focused, and teachers too. You know, I was thinking about this the other day when we published our last episode, and I feel like every time we check in at the beginning, I say the same thing, which is that it's busy. And I'm like annoyed, like come up with something different to say, but it's true. It's just constantly busy, and it's just a new version of that. So we also have high school credit exams at the middle school level taking place in these couple of weeks. We are prepping for mid-year testing as soon as we come back, trying to tie up loose ends on things that we can before we leave for the break and at the close of the semester. You know, so there's just a lot. And there's also a lot of fun stuff happening too. Lots of winter concerts and performances. And we hosted on my campus incoming sixth graders last week. We call it a cat camp. It's like a transition where they get to come walk the halls and take a tour and eat lunch in the cafeteria and kind of see what it's going to be like to be a middle schooler. And that was fun for them. Stressful for me, fun for them, which is the most important thing. But it was successful because both days of that, we heard kids in the cafeteria at the end saying, "I love middle school. I can't wait to come here."
Whoa, I've never heard that sentence before.
I know, mission accomplished. What about you, Matthew?
Yeah, it's very similar, Natalie. It's fast-paced, busy. It's this weird combination of some fun things coming, some events coming up in the next week or two, and then also some anxiety-ridden stuff. We have map testing coming up. Obviously, report cards are sort of like the 9 weeks is coming to a close, so projects, tests, all that stuff. And then for me, we have our last big debate tournament next Saturday. It's going to be out in Dripping Springs. It's an all-day affair. And then we have our esports teams made it to the semifinals this
Heck
year
yes.
For the state.
Way to go.
So we're going to be going up to Baylor to compete in their esports arena, which should be really cool. And then, I know that there is some holiday parties coming up in the works amongst the staff, and a few fun sounding field trips. But the kids are off the walls for sure. They're going a little bonkers right now. And man, school's going back to school tomorrow. Okay, got to prep for
Yeah.
this. Yeah.
Y'all both brought up testing in your anecdotes there, which was great. I kind of have a follow-up question for both of you. Matthew, real quick for our listeners, you mentioned map testing. Just in case people don't know what that is, what does that entail?
So map testing is actually one of my favorite standardized tests. I think it's more accurate than some of the others. So map tests go for we have three of them at the beginning of the year, middle of the year, and end of the year. And the map tests are in reading comprehension and math. And they're really all about measuring growth of the individual student. And so it's the questions for each student are different or become different. And the tests become more challenging as the student sort of like progresses through them. They are semi-timed tests, not really timed, I guess. But they take about 2 hours to complete. And it's something that every school, I believe in Texas, does.
Yeah, I think if you're a public education student in Texas, you have gone through MAP testing, at least in the last couple of decades, for sure.
I
And
think it's
then,
being used more now than ever too with TIA, right? As a measure of student growth in their learning for performance reviews for teachers.
right, and TIA being the teacher incentive allotment, which is how one of part of the formula that teachers get paid. Based on those metrics, which we talked extensively about in our last episode, right, y'all? And then, Natalie, you mentioned that your kids have exams after the winter break. I'm wondering if, in your many years teaching, if you've noticed a marked difference in when there's final exams before a long break versus after, because mine take them in December and then it's kind of like we're done with them. What is it like when kids have major exams in January?
Well, actually, the final exams or semester exams are taking place before the break. I was actually referring to map testing when I was
Oh,
saying that we
okay.
have testing coming up after the break. So, yeah, but to answer your question, I think they used to, once upon a time, have the semester exam after the winter break. And they quit doing that a long time ago because when kids leave for 2 weeks and then, come back and we expect them to jump right back in and, pick up right where they left off. It's everybody needs a little bit of buffer, warm up,
Yeah.
recall. And so there was a kind of a gap in performance there. So they shifted it before the break for that very reason. And of course, we see much better results in that way.
That's great. Well, I absolutely love those stories. Thank you all both for sharing. And I kind of want to look at this year of teaching through the lens of 2024, right? 2024 kind of on its last legs here. We saw many memorable things this year. We had an election cycle, which some of our listeners may have been aware of. The Dodgers won the World Series, which was just a month ago, but feels like longer. Do you even remember that we had a Summer Olympics this year? That was
No, that seems
2024.
so far away.
Yeah, that was
Facts.
this year. Yeah, but looking ahead, at the end of the year, as is custom for a lot of Americans, we've got New Year's right around the corner, and some people might be digging deep into resolution making. So we wanted to talk a little bit about that today. In the personal side of things, are y'all resolutions makers? Matthew, do you make big resolutions every year? And if so, what's your success rate?
Oh, my success rate is abysmal. Zero would be the number of successes in terms of resolutions. Some years I make them, some years I don't. But what I've switched to, this for the listeners at home, if you want some good advice, and for the two of you, what I've switched over to are Atomic Habits. If you've never read the book Atomic Habits, it's a game changer. And so actually I just finished redoing my Atomic Habits for however long they last. I have no idea. But I A few things that I want to change in my day-to-day life, and it's a, I don't know, it's a way of sort of like a turning things into habits rather than setting goals, rather than setting resolutions. You sort of like build habits of what you want to do and what you don't want to do. And that I've actually found really helpful, and I'm really like, I nerd out about it. I'm really excited about these new atomic habits that I have. I've got my sort of like spreadsheet and checking them off each day or whatever. So if you haven't read the book Atomic Habits and you're looking to change your life, go with
That's a
it.
good one. What about you, Natalie? What's your success rate? And I want hard numbers, okay?
Well, you know, I'm not a math
52%.
gal like you. I don't keep stats in my diary, my personal diary, but I prefer to think of it, well, I prefer to set an intention versus a resolution. There's something about the semantics there that makes it a little bit less, I feel like less of a failure if I've set an intention to do something and I'm constantly working towards it versus resolving to do something and giving myself a deadline and then missing that deadline. But I will add on a personal note that at the end of the year, I think everybody, whether you set a resolution or not, everybody kind of is reflective, right? It's just inherently a reflective time where we make this transition into a new year. And I have that as a human, like everyone else, at the end of the calendar year. But I also have that on another level because my birthday is on New Year's Eve. And so I
Fun.
think there's
Oh.
that similar reflection that happens when we hit the turn of a new year of our lives. And
Right.
so I it's kind of a double whammy, it feels like, anyway. But I do make a vision board. I started that tradition with my mom and my sister a few years ago and like to kind of visualize. I'm artsy and visual anyway, but like to visualize what I would like to see come to fruition within the new year. But I also have gotten away from waiting until the new year to start working toward a goal or something, an intention that I know I'm ready to set for myself. So I'm kind of all over the place with that. Do you set resolutions,
You have
Luke?
a vision board though.
I do.
Yeah, so you're marking things down. Okay.
Yeah,
All right.
it's
Cool.
chaos, but it's organized chaos in my
Yeah.
world.
That's what I call my class.
To answer your question, Natalie, this is all things education, right? And so we have this term in teaching, it's been around since before my time, called SMART goals, right? Which is an acronym for our listeners. And the M in SMART, I think, stands for measurable or something
Measurable.
similar to that. In fact, Matthew, can you name all five of the SMART?
Ooh.
Putting you on the spot.
Oh, have you had your coffee
Realistic.
yet?
The
I'm blanking on the S. Let me come back to the
first
S.
one.
Measurable.
Can
Oh,
I help
man.
you? Can you phone a friend?
Phone a
Yeah,
friend.
phone a friend immediately.
Okay.
Nailed it.
The S is specific.
Specific,
Specific,
yes.
measurable, actionable, time sensitive,
And realistic.
and
Don't, it's not
realistic.
SMART goals.
It's not SMAP goals, it's SMART goals.
Well, sometimes it could be
Realistic,
SMAP.
yeah, that's the realistic is the key one there, I think.
Yeah,
Yeah.
well, realistically, when I set my goals or my resolutions, as it were, I've moved away from measurable that I know is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
Just to get like hyper specific, there's that S. Let's say you're making a resolution about reading more and you decide to give yourself like a number of books. I think that one of two things for me, I only speak for myself, one of two things always happens, which is A, I'll fall short and feel down on myself, or B, I'll do some trickery to make sure that I meet it, like read a 80-page novella and check, right? Or rush through one and not really soak it up, which at that point, are you even reading? So for me, the measurable can look a lot of other ways. If it is reading more, it can just be like, I'm going to set aside 2 hours a week, right? And then it doesn't matter how many books you
Right,
read because
right.
it's just about that quality time, which is the great thing about reading, right? For those of us that like to read. So that's kind of what I do. But moving into our main topic today, I'm not planning to make any super tangible or even quantitative resolutions this year, or smart ones, as it were. Because to be honest, knowing myself, and trying to avoid that self-defeat, I just want to, live my life as well as I can, whatever that looks. That would kind of miss out on the measurable piece. But I mean, that's a good mindset to have, right? And in January, besides just being a new year and us going back to work and all of those things, we are looking forward to a legislative session in Texas in January at the
That's
state
right.
capitol. We're going to cover that in extensive detail next year, and we're really excited to bring that to our listeners. So look forward to that. But just kind of looking ahead in more of just a conversational way, as public educators, we're really hoping that our state representatives and senators and other policymakers at the Capitol are just going to make decisions that benefit our students, right? That's what we really want, and our teachers. I think that's non-controversial. And kind of looking back at the recent campaigns that just culminated here in Texas specifically, we wanted to talk about one specific subgroup that got a lot of attention in the run-up to the November elections. Specifically, transgender youths and transgender people at large. It has been quite something to see their lives so thoroughly caught up in the statewide conversation, maybe even to play my hand disproportionately to the sense of that being a problem in our public schools. So today, we really want to set the record straight for all our listeners. And we're going to run through three brief topics on this. First one being what is and maybe more likely isn't happening in our schools in Texas. Natalie's going to speak on that. And also in high school sports, I can speak on that as well. Number two, what resources do students and families and educators have to support v all vulnerable students, not just this specific subgroup, but all of them, because that is part of the mandate. And then number three, getting resolution oriented, what are we looking forward to in January from our state legislators and beyond? Does that sound good to y'all?
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. What is happening in schools? There's a lot of hysteria is too strong of a word, but just concern, right, from parents. We don't want to talk down to our parents and our listeners. This is a concern that a lot of people have about what's happening in schools when it comes to gender affirming care or conditioning and things of that nature. Is this actually a problem? Natalie, as a school leader, what do you think about this situation about kids coming to school, receiving gender affirming care, and then coming home a different person on the spot? Is this happening in Texas schools?
No, it's not happening in my school. I guess that's the most relevant space that I can speak to. But I know in our work, a lot of teachers across the state of Texas who are actively serving in a lot of different schools and a lot of different districts. And I have never once been made aware of that coming up. Not to say that it hasn't, because obviously people are talking about it. But I think that people are talking about it in spaces everywhere other than the schools themselves. Like in our campuses, even when we checked in at the beginning of this podcast episode and we talked about what was going on and what we're trying to close out and what we're looking forward to, that never came up. We talked about testing, we talked about grade, reporting, we talked about student events, we talked about a number of
Accountability.
things. Yeah, we did not talk about any sort of conditioning or grooming or promotion of gender, anything in, with our students, because we are in these schools to give our students an education. And I think that it's important to note that as much as it is being sensationalized in the news, or was maybe during campaigns leading up to election season this year, I want to reassure parents who have that concern that it is not at the forefront in the way that they may think.
Yeah,
What about in
really
your
well
schools?
said.
Does it come up often or at all?
Almost never in my school. It only comes up insofar as any student with any sort of identity or problem that they're having in their life, we help them, right?
Right.
And especially when it gets escalated through the lens of discrimination or prejudice or even bullying, which is a really incendiary word when we talk about how to help students, we have to prevent those things, right? Those negative charged things from happening in our schools. And it's no different if the situation is just a kid getting bullied for something stereotypical and traditional, like their looks, right? Or something, or their acne or the things that we went through when we were growing up. If what it is a gender questioning or gender identity, and that leads to bullying, we have to prevent that. And so it's not happening. There's no doctors are not coming in to work with these kids. It's us. We're working with these kids and just helping them be the best selves that they can be and avoid those negative things that happen in high schools and younger grades.
Right. Now, I want to acknowledge that there are students in my campus who are exploring their gender identity, who are figuring that out for themselves, or maybe they've already figured it out and they're navigating that aspect of their life on top of all the other awkward things that being in middle school presents, right?
Right.
But if anything, I want parents to know, the parents of those students to know that their students are supported and they are treated as any other student in regard to the high quality education that we're trying to deliver to them in
Right.
academics. And they have a lot of mental health support through our counseling services and things like that, which I think could probably be ramped up a little bit. Maybe we'll talk about that a little later. But ultimately, I just want to make it clear that while this is a real tangible experience for people who are in a position to explore anything other than what is considered textbook on paper in terms of their own gender identity, from an academic perspective, that is not our focus. Our focus is to support these students in learning and achieving academically.
The same at my school as well. I mean, we're the largest public middle school in Austin. And the idea that, kids coming in the school or being exposed, on by the teachers to ideas that they can change their gender or that they should change their gender or that promoting sort of like non-binary identities, that's not happening, right? The basic one of the basic functions of any public school is to ensure a safe environment for all of the students, right? No matter their race, no matter their nationality, no matter their sexuality, no matter their gender, no matter what, all students should feel safe in a public school. And so we as educators and we as campus leaders need to ensure that that's happening. But we're not, the idea, I think that it's being pushed a lot right now, unfortunately, is that public schools are these ultra liberal institutions that are pushing these sort of radical values on our children. And that's just not happening. That's not the case. I've never heard of that before. I speak to teachers all the time outside of my school. And there's no evidence of that being the case. So, unfortunately, I think that this issue of transgender legislation in schools is really smoke and mirrors. I think that it's not an issue. What we need to be focusing are on other
Right.
more important stuff.
Yeah, and
We've
we are
got
going
a
to get
lot
into
of
that about the legislature in
options.
the third section. So I love that you kind of presaged that for everybody. What is happening in schools to kind of move into point number two is that transgender students are facing disproportionately high levels of prejudice and bullying. They are the students that are receiving it more than any other subgroup, according to some facts and figures that we can put into our show notes. In addition, just kind of more generally, they are regularly hearing messaging from both kids and adults and policymakers and campaigners that their personhood is less important or some worse, non-existent. which is tragic for a student that is not even a full-grown adult yet. And in fact, what's even worse is that they are not receiving the same level of protections, legal protections from discrimination that other groups do in this country. So when this is happening in our schools, Natalie and Matthew, what resources do students and families have to support our vulnerable students? What have you done to help students, and what can be done more systematically to help these kids? Matthew, let's start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think for our parent listeners, for any students who might be listening to this and experiencing this or knowing someone who experiences this, I think the first line of defense against any attacks or any bullying that's going on is to use your school counselors. I think we're really lucky at our school. We have amazing school counselors. And I think like the first place you might want to explore going to seek help, to seek advice, to seek somebody to just talk to is that school counselor, because they're probably going to have the most resources available to you on campus. And they're a trusted individual. They have your confidentiality and so forth. As a teacher, I've been teaching for a while now, and I've definitely taught a number of non-binary students, transgender students. And my advice to other teachers is to just treat them like a normal person, which they are, right? And to really sort of like go out of your way and to go out of your way and to sort of like get to know their interests and to speak to those interests and to sort of build up a level of trust so that if they are feeling uncomfortable or if something does arise where they feel threatened or in danger, they can come to you and they know that they can come to you. And if nothing else, they can just talk to you, because that's what a lot of kids need right now. They need an adult who will listen to them. For me, I'm really, it brings me a lot of joy to be able to do that for my students, no matter who they are, right? And so that's been my experience. It's definitely been my experience in the past 2 years, for sure, even more so. And I think that, like, again, it's just like, as a teacher, get to know the kids. Treat them like a normal person, which they are, and then build that trust, that relationship. And I think like also like I do try to ensure that with group activities, with projects and so forth, that I'm partnering them up strategically.
That's really, really well said. Yep. Natalie, what about you?
I think one of the best things that I can speak to is that while this has become such a key, soundbite in the areas where it's being, this is just another, like you were saying before, Matthew, this is another way that education is being politicized unnecessarily. To introduce this topic and bring it to the forefront as we've seen and heard it be done in recent years. I think the best way we combat that in our schools is by doing exactly what you just said, which is practicing our role as an educator in identifying the whole child and identifying their academic strengths and weaknesses. At the end of the day, every human ever, especially in this formative stage of their life, when there are students in schools, they want to be seen, they want to be heard, they want to be understood, they want to be accepted and valued. And that's whether they're straight, gay, identify as female, male, fluid, whatever. It doesn't matter. As an educator, our job in our individual classrooms is to see, hear, value, understand our students, recognize their academic abilities, celebrate their achievements, and encourage them to continue to pursue further. And that is Ultimately, the greatest resource that we can be to our students is that grounded source of whatever's going on out there, whatever noise is happening out there. In here, you are a student first and you are focused on your learning, and we are here to support you in that. Period.
Y'all just spoke so eloquently on this. I actually am kind of like tearing up a little. It's so good. And the only thing I have to add on this part of the outline is just teachers, just like Matthew and Natalie are talking about, if you can, maybe you can create a formal network of support for these vulnerable students. Maybe you can point them to the great Gay Straight Alliance that you have on your campus, or start one if there isn't one, which is a safe space for students, like Natalie said, to be seen. I often remind people that I talk to in my everyday life that these students are going through the normal trials and tribulations of any high school or younger student is going through in this state. So when I talk to them and help them, like Matthew was talking about, I just encourage the same things I would encourage to any student: to find calm, to unplug, to take action if they're comfortable with doing it, to empower themselves, to learn more, to ask questions, to safe spaces, to express themselves, right? Find those support networks, like I just mentioned. And of course, reach out for help if things are getting really bad. And that's what we have to do as teachers, right? Looking forward to January with the new legislators being sworn in and new maybe potential legislation coming out. Matthew, a few minutes ago, you talked about, I think you used the phrase smoke and mirrors, which was a really good one, about like, what do we actually need our lawmakers to be doing on this topic? And is it anything, right? I would start off the conversation by saying that any sort of draconian legislation that seeks to demonize any subgroup of Texas students, no matter what it is off base, right? And gonna do more harm than good and distract from what we really need. Matthew, what were you kind of saying about this a little
Yeah,
earlier?
I'll second that, and I would just say that any kind of legislation like that would be counter to the 14th Amendment in the Constitution,
There you
and
go.
also it sort of like deprives schools the ability to do what they need to do in terms of providing a safe environment for all students. For me, honestly, I mean, there was a lot of legislation passed already in the state of Texas and nationally
That's
around
right.
this issue and how it applies to schools. For me, my hope in January is that this is actually not an issue that legislators focus on. I don't know how much legislators can really do in terms of this topic. And Texas has way bigger, more pressing issues when it comes to public education than something that applies to such a small percentage of the population, right? We need to focus on getting 70% of our students into college. Right now we're at 30%. So we need to talk about how schools are being funded. We need to talk about how teachers are being compensated. We need to talk about facility updates. This topic, I hope, falls to the back burner.
Yeah, and just a couple of facts and figures for our listeners related to what you just said. Number one, Matthew mentioned the legislation in 2021, 2 sessions ago, but 4 years ago, the state did ban student athletes from participating on teams that do not match their sex assigned at birth. So this is already an illegal situation in our state, which is even disregarding the vanishingly few actual cases that there have been, both in Texas and nationwide, of transgender athletes playing in specifically women's sports. It's not really happening at the collegiate level, and it's certainly not happening that much at the high school level, proportional to the problem. This is a solution that is in search of a problem. And then that's kind of what we have to say about that. Natalie, what about you?
Yeah, I like the way you said that. It's a solution in search of a problem to like qualify it or something. Because I would even argue, just going to throw this out there, that for all of the implication that has been made that there is conditioning happening in schools around any of these things, I would argue that the people who are accusing that are actually conditioning the opposite. Are they,
There
I
you
mean,
go.
or at least I question, are they proposing that we condition the opposite, that they're not, that nobody's allowed to think or be or do anything different than the status quo?
That's
I
a
mean,
valid
I.
question.
It's heavy. Well, yeah, that's spot on.
I think it's a valid question, and also maybe is the starting point for the argument of why we are seeing those disproportionately high levels of bullying targeting the LGBTQ students in walking our hallways. So thank you for speaking on that, Natalie.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about y'all, but Lance, as a math teacher, I imagine when your students file into the classroom in the morning, you are excited to talk to them about math. And
That's
Matthew, I
right.
imagine it when your students file in, you are excited to talk to them about reading, language arts, speech, debate. And when my
Absolutely,
students
that's
were
what we
filing
do.
into my classroom, I was excited for them to explore the world of visual art. And
There you
prior to
go.
that, English when I was doing that.
Well said. And in closing, I will say that we still want to continue doing that, even in this interregnum period when students want to talk about, I don't know, gingerbread houses and holiday lights. I don't know. What are the things that students have on their minds right now? Sugar plum fairies, right? So, to our listeners, in closing, think about what you're talking about with your students or your rhetoric and your actions, and think about how the things that you say might potentially affect people that belong to different subgroups in your life, maybe even different subgroups of people that you've never met. Perhaps you have not even met a transgender person in your life. And so we just have to continue to be compassionate and open-minded about these sorts of things, and specifically make sure that teachers reinforce that the endeavor remains the same. It's non-controversial to support our students, to help them learn, and to help them grow. And that is our episode for this December, January interregnum period. So until next time, thanks again to everyone for listening to All Things Education with Lance, Natalie, and Matthew. Please, please, please follow us on Instagram. All Things Education Podcast is your source for our comments, pictures, and also to make sure that you don't miss any future episodes. And of course, we're still soliciting voice notes with your thoughts that we can feature on future episodes. Until next time, happy holidays.
Happy holidays, y'all.
Bye, y'all.
Thank you for listening to All Things Education.
Be sure to leave us a review and share the show with everyone you know.
And if you liked what you heard, stay tuned for more compelling conversations with Natalie, Matthew, and Lance.
Until next time, Texas.